Time to get our local view a tad later than usual. See all our next guest is up to for the Register Guard on either the cover of the sports section, registerguard.com, on Twitter. The handle is at AustinMeekRG. Austin, appreciate your flexibility. How are things?
Hey, Steve, everything's good here. How are you doing?
Awesome. So you took part in the Hood to Coast this past weekend. Just an amazing event. We had some friends who took part. So was this your first time? Kind of what were the details? What was your role?
Well, this was my first time, and I definitely got the full rookie initiation. I ended up. So what happened was I was supposed to run. You run three legs, and my middle one was supposed to be about 5 miles. They actually changed the course, so it ended up being almost 8 miles. I'm writing about this for a column tomorrow. So I got a little curveball thrown in there in the middle, and when it's 4:30 in the morning and you've had about an hour of sleep, that extra 3 miles feels pretty long, especially when it's uphill on gravel with all the vans going by, kicking dust in your face. I'm not complaining. It probably sounds like I'm complaining, but I'm actually not. It was really fun. I ended up having a blast. I would do it again in a heartbeat. I wasn't sure how I would like it, but it was really a lot of fun.
So I've been told two things. See if you can verify their accuracy. Until you participate, you don't realize the magnitude of this event. And be it the team names or other aspects, it plays perfectly into that kind of keep Portland weird mentality.
I would say both of those are correct, yeah. There's more than 1,000 teams and more than, I think, 12,000 runners.
Wow.
Who participate, so it's massive. It's a lot of fun. It's not like a, you know, out in nature type experience. You're around vehicles and people at all times, but it's still really fun. And yes, I would say the majority of the team names we probably could not say on the radio. Hood to Coast is one of those things where you put your political correctness aside for a weekend and go out there in the woods and then don't talk about what happened.
What happens at the Hood to Coast stays at the Hood to Coast?
That very phrase was uttered in our van several times over the course of the weekend.
Nice. We're talking with Austin Meek of the Register Guard. I wanted to get to what you wrote about Thomas Tyner, who's now with Oregon State. But at the core, for those who were kind of surprised he's back playing football, is it a case of get in line because Tyner himself is kind of surprised he's where he is?
Yeah, I think that's accurate to say. I went up last week to talk to Thomas Tyner because I hadn't talked to him since he got to Oregon State. And when I talked to him, I got the sense that he was very much at peace with his decision to come back and play college football. I thought when he walked away at Oregon that he was finished. He thought that too. He said he thought he was done with football. But just over the course of time, as he was finishing his degree at Oregon, started to feel like he wasn't totally satisfied with how his career ended, that he wanted to try to end it the right way and give it one more shot. He found an opportunity to do that at Oregon State. So, hey, I'm pulling for him. I think any Oregon fans should be pulling for him, maybe with the exception of when he's playing against Oregon. He gave Oregon some good years. But I think it's been good for him to be in a situation where there's not quite as much expected of him and he's not quite as much in the spotlight. You know, at Oregon State, he's going to be a backup. He might carry the ball 4 or 5 times a game. Ryan Nall is clearly the number one running back there, so he's just a piece of the puzzle. And I think that's good for him because I never felt like he was really comfortable with all the spotlight that was on him at Oregon.
Yeah, he was a rarity, a 5-star from this state. So did he? When you talk to him, because it's obviously a pretty unique story, a local kid played here, but then now is playing there. I guess kind of the circumstances surrounding his decision and, you know, reaching out and how, I guess, it was received by Coach Anderson and the Beavs to land him there.
Well, Gary Anderson obviously did his homework on Thomas Tyner. Was familiar with him as a player, I'm sure, and you know, just did the basic groundwork. And I think for Oregon State, it was just a matter of figuring out, is he serious about this? And once they figured out that he was, then, yeah, of course, you make room for a guy who was a five-star recruit, even if he's been away from it for a couple of years, even if it takes him some time to get in shape, even if he's not going to be a huge part of your offense, you definitely have a place for a guy like that. And for Tyner, he couldn't play again at Oregon. He medically retired from Oregon.
Right.
So his choices were go to Oregon State, leave the state, go down a level, something like that. But I think Oregon State is a good situation for him, and I don't think any Oregon fans should hold it against him that he went there. I know it's a rivalry. I know people are passionate about it. But when you look at his situation, I don't think you can begrudge him the opportunity to do this one more time.
Nah, I think that's 100% spot on. Austin, I want to get to what you wrote about Sunday, the passing of Coach Taggart's dad. I've got to be honest, I was not aware of the details. I know he was only 70 years old. So for those who might not have been aware, I mean, I think it happened while I was on vacation. That may be why I didn't have my finger on the pulse of it. This was like a horrifyingly sudden circumstance for that family, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely been a tough time for the Taggart family. It's just hard because this is the height of Willie's career. One of the biggest moments of his career will be stepping on the field for the first time as the coach at Oregon, and his dad, who's been there with him really the whole time, is not going to be there to see it. And it did happen very suddenly. Willie said it was just the end of July that he found out that anything was wrong at all with his dad.
Jeez.
And then there was a period of time where they were trying to figure out what was going on. And then just a few days before he died, Willie was with him in Tampa. He was diagnosed with liver cancer, but they seemed pretty optimistic that he was going to be able to be treated. They were going to get him in a great cancer hospital. And then just within a matter of 3 or 4 days, he passed away. So it's been a really tough time for the Taggart family in the midst of everything that Willie's got going on, preparing for his first game at Oregon.
Ugh, it's just awful. It was very well done, the piece. I'm not trying to put it on you. I want to get to some Oregon football. The depth chart came out, and I went right to the backup quarterback, who obviously is a guy named Orr. a year ago, some knocked them for not getting Justin Herbert work in the opener. Any logical level of concern that they haven't had Taylor Alley or Burmeister clearly emerge as the number two, or with Southern Utah coming up, they could afford to be coy?
Well, I won't be surprised if that Orr stays on the depth chart for a while, because I think a lot of it is going to be situational. If Oregon could get through a whole season using one quarterback and maybe a backup for mop-up time, boy, that'd be a great situation. It's pretty rare now in college football for that to happen. Usually, you need at least two quarterbacks to play in college football. And so I think, you know, the question of what Oregon would do if, God forbid, Justin Herbert goes down, even if it's just for a series or two, if Justin Herbert goes down in an important game, who is it that goes out there on the field? Is it Taylor Alley? Is it Braxton Burmeister? I think if it's Southern Utah and the score is 64-10, it's probably Taylor Alley out there playing the mop-up snaps. If you could somehow possibly redshirt Braxton Burmeister this year, that wouldn't be a bad thing. But I think realistically, you know, it's hard to think you're going to get through the whole season with just one quarterback. And I think it would be a really tough call of where you go if Justin Herbert goes down, because Alley has the experience. Burmeister maybe has the higher upside, but is still really young. One of those guys, I have a feeling, is going to be called upon at some point in the season in an important situation.
Yeah, logic would indicate that. A couple final thoughts for Austin Meek. The offensive line, you see Jake Pizarcik listed as a starter, missed half of last year. He joins the three redshirts from last season and the now healed Tyler Crosby. But man, there's a lot of familiar, experienced names behind them. Safe to say, if there was a reason to be really optimistic about some of the aspects of this team, offensive line pretty high on the list.
Yeah, that definitely looks like the strength of the team, along with the running back group. And those two together, I think, could be a really potent combination. Oregon's going to be counting on that. They need that offensive line to number one, protect Justin Herbert, because as we said, the quarterback situation is pretty shaky after him. So they need to keep Justin Herbert on his feet, and they need to set the tone for a running game that should be the bread and butter for Oregon's offense. So you like the depth on Oregon's offensive line. You like the experience. Tyrell Crosby coming back at left tackle. He's probably pretty entrenched there. Jake Hansen at center. But you, when you've got a guy like Brady Aiello, who was a starter for 9 games last year, listed as a backup now,
yeah.
To me that says that the depth is pretty good. I would look at that as a positive, that a guy who was good enough to start 9 games last year, you now have as a backup if you need him.
Let's wrap with this. I was listening to you and Ryan, the Duck Pod, and you were joined by Paul Meyerberg of USA Today. And right out of the gate, you guys asked him to kind of paint a picture of the current Pac-12. Interesting answer. What did he have to say about this conference 4 or 5 years ago as to opposed to how he views it heading into this year?
Well, Willie Taggart is coming into a completely different dynamic than Chip Kelly did when Chip Kelly took over the program. I think that's one of the factors that people need to keep in mind when they set the expectations for Willie Taggart is, you know, when Chip Kelly was really had it rolling at Oregon, it was USC and Stanford was starting to get better, but Washington was down. Several of these teams, Washington State, that have really been on the rise, Colorado, Utah, you know, these teams were all down at the time that Oregon really had it rolling. And now you look around the conference, and those teams are all, for the most part, competitive. So it is a much tougher situation now in the Pac-12. There's a bunch of teams who feel like they have their coach, they have their program in place, and they expect to be good every year. And it's a tough situation to walk into. It's good for the conference. It's great if you're just a fan of Pac-12 football. It's great because every weekend you're getting good games. You've got teams in the playoff mix. I think there are 3 or maybe 4 that could be there this year. So it's great as a fan. But as a specific fan of Oregon, though, it means it's tough sledding every week, and it's going to be a lot harder for Willie Taggart to achieve, you know, even I think a fraction of what Chip Kelly did, because the league is so much tougher.
Yeah, well, somebody referred to it as the landscape of the conference. Good stuff as always from Austin Meek, registerguard.com, the actual newspaper at AustinMeekRG on Twitter. Appreciate the time as always, Austin, and I look forward to some face-to-face on Saturday.
Yeah, I'll see you in the press box. It's been a while. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Have a good one, Austin.